right. Welcome to Mike and the Mad Wop Pacific Drive Time Radio. Call in and we'll sue you and your entire staff. Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Please, if you don't call, I'm going to be so emotionally hurt.
We don't want any of that now, do you?
Yes. So, it's Drive Time Pacific hours, 5:30 Pacific, 8:30 Eastern. I hope I didn't confuse anybody by saying we were doing Drive Time Pacific Radio, but for those of you coming...
Didn't Jazz and Jesse do like actual Drive Time? Like,
well, they did Drive Time East Coast, but it didn't work out. For some reason, it didn't work. Jesse was, he complains all the time. So he was complaining about it. So they decided they're doing a Mountain Time Drive Time show now. So Drive Time Mountain Time.
Is that a real time zone?
So they go seven.
Turn day if you're going to Mountain Time.
So there's only a few people that live out there. They're going 7 to 9 Mountain. 5 to 7 Mountain Time, 7 to 9 Eastern, and so now we're doing Pacific Drive Time. So all of you driving home from work on the West Coast, you can enjoy this as your Drive Time radio. I think that's a funny meme. You know, most people still live in Eastern Time Zone in the U.S. Vast majority of people live in the Eastern Time Zone.
Vast majority of humans on the United States.
Yeah, in the whole country, like I would say, yeah, a good amount. So most people are in Eastern Time, but here we are, Pacific Drive Time Radio.
On the Pacific Coast, there are buddies out there.
Yeah,
they're way out there, Mr. Furman, Mr. Fairwater. You guys can listen to us on your ride home.
Yeah, implying they work. Deutsch.
Oh, yeah.
But right. Anyway,
hey, real quick, the number 936-666-1488. Check it out. If you're a pay cuck, you probably already have the number. But you know, hey. Call anyways.
Yeah. So do we have anybody in the queue?
We do. Right off the bat, we got a good friend of the show.
Okay.
A good friend of the show. He used to have his own show at one point. This is Mr. DeMarcus Leibowitz.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Sir?
Hi, Johnny. Hi. Hi, Johnny.
What's up, buddy?
What's up?
Hello, Michael.
Yes. Hi. You sound really soft. Can you... talking to your phone louder or something? I don't know. You sound really soft.
Can you hear me now?
It's the same. I mean, I can hear you, but it's just really low. But go ahead.
So, gentlemen, I have two shocking exposés to share with the audience.
Okay.
This, for the first distressing piece of palace intrigue... Have you guys ever noticed that Michael's middle name is never mentioned either on the TRS network or in the media?
Well, actually, I had never thought about that.
What, my middle name?
Interesting, huh? Yes, your middle name.
Oh, all right. Middle name is Enoch. What? I mean, I've been...
Yeah. Well, it turns out that Mike actually has two middle names.
Yeah, that's true.
Making his full name... Michael Herman Hubert Pinovich.
Two H's. Yeah.
Hubert.
Is this... I thought you were going with some actual concern troll that was out there, and I was like, oh, God, this crap again.
Oh, no. It's not a Jewish name. It's just like a really herby, like 1800s Gilded Age kind of thing.
Yeah. See, why is it got to be Herb? Why is it got to be Herbie? That was a good, strong man's name back then.
Herbert. Yeah, why did Herb become the word for a nerd in like the 90s? I called someone a Herb.
No.
It had to do with the dude from WKRP in Cincinnati, I think. He was a nerd. Okay. It was Herb.
I used to love calling
it's
people
not
that.
Herbert. It's Hubert. Hubert.
Okay.
Oh. Whatever.
Michael Hubert. Herman Hubert Pinovich.
Okay. Herman Hubert.
I used to love calling people a Herb back in the day. It was funny.
It's in New York.
Yeah, too. Man, his name's a Herb, son.
Yeah, it is a New York thing for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it also turns out that one Richard Spencer has been lying about his middle name as well.
Oh, gosh.
As if Bertrand wasn't bad enough, apparently Richie Rich's middle name is actually Pierpont. Richard Pierpont Spencer.
Oof. Okay. I mean, I don't know where you're going. I mean, I'm not picking. If there's some irony here, I'm just missing it. I don't Pierpont.
I just think it's concerning. All these old, conservative, classic 1800s
conservative.
Sound really
are you implying he should have something like more modern, like a Jaden Caden?
No.
Aiden. Oh God.
No, fuck that shit is getting.
Yeah, Jaden Caden Aiden names like Aiden type names, like any name ending of that. It's like you just
if you're out there, just lame. You're named Aiden.
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm glad that you're a king.
Scout.
Well, that's like liberals like naming their kids after fucking To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, God.
Bro, if you want your daughter to be a lesbian, name her Scout.
Yeah.
That's a guarantee right there.
Yeah. Scout. You name her after Tonto's horse?
What? No, it's named after the fucking girl in To Kill a Mockingbird. It's people that like really absorb that public school curriculum.
Thought about them.
Yeah, well, that's the first thing I thought of.
I always thought.
Also, the boy's name was Jem. It was supposed to be a nickname for Jeremy, but think about it, Jem. Who likes gems? What kind of people like gems? Really makes you think.
Yeah.
You know, I used to think that that book was written by a Jew, but it turns out that book was written by a Quaker, which is almost as bad.
Oh, yeah, really. By the way, a moment ago, Mike, instead of saying absorb, you said absorb.
I guess that may what is so. Yeah, absorb. I don't know. Sometimes I pronounce things funny on purpose just to make people spurg out. It's actually a great troll.
It is. It's like I did the thing about Cologne, Germany, and I called it Cologne.
Yeah, you're gonna get the best is like getting trivial things wrong that you know are important to a certain subculture, and boy, are they gonna freak out, man. It's really funny.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to do with wine. You could do Pinot Grigio or Merlot.
Yeah, dude, because you get these snobby people like, you know, I'm going to have the Pinot Grigio.
Oh, yeah. I can't even listen. Ow.
I'm going to have the Pinot Neuer. What is it? Neuer? Is that how you say that?
Yeah, I would have to excuse myself if somebody actually ordered the food.
The Cabernet. Let me have a Cabernet. Please, I'll try the Cabernet. That sounds good.
Love Cabernet.
I actually love... That's my favorite kind of wine, is Cabernet.
You like Cabernet?
Oh, yeah.
I like Merlot. Yeah. I like a Merlot. I like a big, bold Merlot.
So, what you're telling me is that you're a pleb.
Come on, Merlot and Zin? No. Not white Zin. Red, like old vine.
Dude, the pink Zin. That means you're just a thought with a kid named Aiden. If you're drinking that.
No. The pink Zin. Oh, yeah. The white Zinfandel.
The pink stuff. Like, what is that? The fucking Gallo?
When I used to bartend, and girls, it's like, if a girl ordered white Zin, she's a whore. If a guy ordered white Zin, he is gay.
Yeah. Definitely.
Pretty much standard.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
I smell it.
Best white wine is Pinot Grigio.
A hint of
nice
lilac,
fruity.
A hint of lilac and oak wood. Mm. I'm pretending to smell these things in my wine.
Yeah, I always just taste wine. I'm like, yeah, you know, this one is either more bitter or more sweet than the other one. That's the only differences I notice. But my favorite white would be a Pinot Grigio, a nice sweet grapey taste in it. Yummy. It's good stuff.
I'm not a huge white fan, but yeah, I like a good Grigio.
Yeah, this is the only one I really like. You know, I got to tell you, I got to have to say the. Actually, and this isn't necessarily a big problem, but German wine, not really very good. Mm-mm. I don't really like a Riesling. That's not a very good wine. It's too sweet.
Riesling's okay. Sweet, yeah. Syrupy. Yeah. And ice wine?
Germans can stick to beer. That's their forte. Leave wine to the Italians and the French.
Yep.
Yeah. So everybody has their place. Beer and sausage and, you know, wine and cheese.
The Germans don't have, like, the snotty attitude that needs to go with the wine. The French have it. The Northern California.
Well, Italians don't have a snotty attitude either. They just love to party.
Have you ever been? I don't know. Have you ever been to Italy? They're like French, but hairier.
Dude, everyone in Italy is so nice. What are you talking about? Italy's my favorite country in Europe. Yeah. Everyone there is really nice, and they don't give a shit when you mess up their language. They just want to hang out and have fun and party and be nice.
French like that.
Dude, they're so nice,
Italians,
man.
Italians are the best whites.
Dude, Italians are great. What are you talking about? People in Italy are snotty. Are you insane?
No. When it comes to like wine and that kind of stuff.
Oh,
food,
well, sure, but they don't. But they're not a dick about it. Like, if you don't know, they'll just tell you.
No, French people are the kind. Like the French guy will come up to your table and like take your girlfriend. Like, try to take your girlfriend while you're sitting there, and the Italian guy will, you know, buy you guys around.
And then take your girlfriend.
Yes.
I've also been told
the Italian guy waits till you go to the bathroom. The French guy does it right in front of you.
I've been told though that people in France
get his fucking face broken. That's what'll happen.
I've been told that people in France outside of Paris are actually really nice, and this urbanite turning up your nose attitude, which, you know, frankly, urbanites in New York and San Francisco and such places have here as well, is unique to Paris, because, and Paris is its own thing, because Paris is like, you know, the city of lights, the center of Europe, and the blah 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 blah, and so all these people just walk around with their noses up.
Parisians have a lot of their own everything.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But I've been told that once you get out of there, everybody's cool. So
it makes sense.
I'll tell you something. That's absolutely true. And I spent a lot of time in Europe. And the only because I'm an American over there, like, I didn't give a shit about hate speech laws. I figured at worst they were just like, you know, they would like maybe arrest me, and I just call the consulate, and I just be banned from the country or something. Like, okay, big deal. So I was just like saying racist shit all the time. And the only people who would engage me with that and would say all kinds of, like, oh, these Muslims or, you know, the Jews or whatever, were French people. It was people in France, even in Paris, and one French guy in Amsterdam, the one racist guy in Amsterdam was a French expat. And anywhere else I went, in Britain or, you know, Switzerland, you name it, or the Netherlands, no, everybody else was, like, scared shitless to talk about anything. But the French were, like, super, like, watch out for these blacks. And go back to India if you want to cross the street like that. Just like all the time, bro. Like, the French are like pretty racist. And there's tons of guys there that are like fucking, like, you walk down the street and they're doing like construction. There's like just brawny guys, you know, like fixing stuff. They're not like all effeminate. Like, that
you
is feel, total, that's
yeah.
a total like conservative bullshit trope. It's
yeah, and it's there.
Hey, Mike, guys, real quick. I just got a comment from the comment section. Nobody can hear me, and the caller sounds like he's talking through a filter of shit.
Nobody can hear you. Yeah. All right. I don't know what to. Let me see if I can run some. Okay, Johnny, talk.
Right. Hello, everybody.
All right.
Apparently, it's not coming through on butt very well, or something.
Well, dude, the equalizer on butt lights up when you talk. I don't know how else to measure it. And yeah, DeMarcus does sound bad.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do. According to me, this is all working. So okay. I'm sorry about that. But
up a little bit. Am I too loud now? Does that sound better? Does that sound any louder?
Well, see, I'm hitting into the yellow and the red. You're only hitting into the green. See, I mean, maybe I can turn you up.
Let me turn myself up. Is that better? Does that sound even better?
You sound fine to me. I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. Whatever. Sorry, folks.
I don't know what to tell you. Like, according to my settings, everything's working. You're coming through loud and clear on butt.
Okay.
Well, you're just low. But I'll compress this, and then it's going to sound fine. I don't know what else to do. We're just going to have to carry on.
Yeah. Sorry, folks. We'll do what we got to do.
Yeah, dude. It's just, I don't know, dude. I can't. Everything looks good on my end. So I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry, fam. It's the best we can do. Yeah, we got a ton of callers tonight. Holy cow.
Yeah. So, did you have anything else there, DeMarcus?
Yeah, well, for my second scandalous, really startling revelation, I've uncovered a conspiracy at the heart of the dissident right movement.
Oh, my God.
Let me give you a little background by reading an NKVD transcript of episode 430 of TDS, which was released on April 15th of this year. Mr. McNabb says, while the panel is talking about women at Comic-Con, why would they be posing, though? To just hang around with a bunch of sweaty, weird, awkward dorks? Mr. Dunstan replies, well, so they could be Insta-thoughts and shit like that, super chats. We all know this phenomenon. Mr. Pinovich, while mic-talking Mr. Dunstan, says, so they're in a place where there's a 20-man-to-1-woman ratio, and their attention is being competed for, even if by these type of people. Well, it turns out that this is all coded language, a metaphor, and a cry for help from the death panel. After a lengthy 30-day investigation, I've come to the conclusion that our friends, Alexander, Jesse, and Michael, are being blackmailed by alt-right and alt-right thoughts, who use psychosexual energy to ensnare our movement's followers and
No, keep going.
Alex is being controlled by Sinead McCarthy, Jesse by Laura Loomer, and Michael, of course, by Tree of Logic. but the story gets darker. Now, of course, women have no agency, so they could never pull off something like this without some help. If you'll notice, one J.O. De La Rey was nowhere to be found during that episode. Well, it turns out that J.O. is in fact their pimp, and he, along with fellow Detroit native Kid Rock, is trying to water down our message in an attempt to replace white solidarity with civic nationalism and hollow patriotism.
Mm. Okay.
That was a very sad story.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I do think that we have to do something about the psychosexual sadism problem in this thing. I mean, you know,
if only it was a problem.
Ultimately, you know, any behavior that you want to engage in order to fight against psychosexual sadism that you've right. created in your own mind is, of course, acceptable. That includes yeah. doxing people, selling them out to the liberal media, stabbing them in the back. All of this because, you know, you need to fight psychosexual sadism. That's really important. Never mind priests touching kids. Don't look at that. The real psychosexual sadism is to be located on the alt-right and people that make fun of thoughts online. This is the true psychosexual sadism. We've all participated in it. There's no point in denying it. And it has to be stamped out. But even if I have to appeal to Atlantic reporters, even if it means that I have to do, you know, if I have to throw my body on the machine and get a job with a conservative think tank, I will do whatever I need to do. What's up? Maybe people don't understand what I'm talking about. If so, count yourself lucky.
No, I just thought it was funny you guys were having that conversation and the way that you described those women at the Comic-Con. Well, yeah, the hangers-on. Now, of course, longtime girlfriends and wives of guys in the movement are the best women in the world. Like, they're the highest quality women in the world. But the ones that are, you know, just hopping around, bumping around, tee-hee-hee, blushing and stuff, well, you know, I don't know. The 21 male-female ratio, I heard that, and I was just like, are these guys talking about the alt-right, or are they talking about Comic-Con? I don't know.
Well, it's funny that you mention it, because, you know, we have a YouTube channel, and I get some analytics on who views that channel. By the way, some people are starting to move over to using the Brave browser, and they're saying that our videos don't work. All you have to do is whitelist the site. There's no ads, there's no trackers, and there's no Google Analytics on the site. I removed Google Analytics from the site a while ago because I was like, fuck it. It means our Alexa rank is going to tank, but like, I don't care. I know what the real stats are. Our visitor numbers go up, and I am not going to have Google Analytics on the site, because if someone comes to the site, logged in their Google account, Google knows everything about them, and they know they're coming to our site, and there's no need to give them that information. So, yeah. But we do actually, on the YouTube channel, it's 95% men and 5% women, according to their analytics.
What a surprise.
But that's about right. Yeah, that's what I would expect. So.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect it to be any different.
But the women are the best women.
They are.
Some of them. Well, but yes, when you get a scene that is 20-1 male to female, you're going to start to get a problem where other women will see this as like, whoa, new rent-seeking opportunities here, and they'll move in on it. The alt-right being kind of it's a little bit immune to it, although the immunity from having it happen en masse like it happened to gaming means that the people that do come in, I don't know. I don't want to go too far with this, but like, one of the things that this happens to a lot of online scenes, the alt-right is a little bit more than that, and it's also a little bit riskier in that women are very risk-averse creatures. They are very much with the mainstream. But the other funny thing about them is that once they turn, they'll be like more. They love to enforce rules, right? So they'll be the biggest purity spiralers. They'll be like full on with like all the harshest memes and everything. So they'll go full Fed poster. But, you know, it's just the thing where as the social capital of this movement increases, more women will start entering it. But I think women, if they're going to be involved, they should be with a man. That's one of the requirements, I think.
It really should be. If you're single and you're a woman and you want to get involved, find a married woman who's involved and have her hook you up with one of her husband's single friends.
That's a very good idea. That's the way it should go.
It's happened a lot. We've made quite a few connections with people that way. A lot of relationships have happened.
And babies.
Lots of babies. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, there is.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of that over here in my neck of the woods too, with the guys that I know. It's been out of nowhere. It's just like, whoa, wow.
Yeah. Well, come October, just for 1 month, for example, I know personally at least 4 babies coming October.
Nice.
Yeah.
Coming in the typical season. Typical childbirth season too. But all right. Well, do you have anything else, DeMarcus? Because we've been going 20 minutes now, and you do not sound fantastic. Oof. It's probably not your fault, but Johnny, have they commented that they can hear you now, or what's going on?
They can hear me, but DeMarcus still
okay. Well, that's just his fault. Like, his connection just sucks. Yeah. All right, so good.
All right, DeMarcus, thanks for coming on.
Fucking asshole.
Love you,
all right, buddy. Well, I'll leave you with a thought. I won't stay on, just so you guys can discuss it. But I was wondering if you guys think that we should seek POC allies. Like, there's a lot of talk about, like, Iran, and I like Partisan Gal. I love conversations that she's involved in with us, but I feel like as far as, like, the Palestinians and the Iranians, and I know Dr. Duke went over, and I got nothing but love for the good old doctor, but I feel like we might end up getting used as a propaganda tool in that sense without getting anything to gain. And I think we just need to be strong and get enough whites on board, and then we don't need allies. People will just be like, oh shit, the white man's back, let's come to the table and fucking negotiate. And I just worry that we're starting to romanticize other people just because they maybe for a time period are in conflict or whatever, or with the Jews or whatever. So I'll leave you guys with that thought, and thanks for taking my call. And Johnny, I'm sorry if my conspiracy theories weren't up to your level.
What are you talking about? You're good.
Yeah.
All right, Pat.
All right. Well, my opinion on that is as long as we know who we are, then finding people that we think that we can I'm not expecting these people to put our interests above their own, but we're not going to put our interests above their interests above ours either. So if we have a mutual interest, then I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be talking to these people. And on some level, it gives us certain kind of moral validity, and it also dispels all this crap that the media says. I mean, one of the reasons the media doesn't want us to talk is because they want to be able to say uninterrupted that we're a bunch of genocidal maniacs, right? Like, that's the standard lie. They don't want to give us a mic so we can actually give our entirely reasonable viewpoint on race and immigration and stuff like that. So they want to say, no, these people just want to kill literally everybody that's not white, and that couldn't be – that's just, like, really dumb. I mean, there have been people that have said stuff like that, but it's usually trolls, sometimes plants, sometimes just, like, you know, megalomaniacal fucking poorly socialized morons or whatever that have all since been filtered out or have grown up or have changed or have stopped being edgy or whatever. But I would say, like, I'm not saying that I'm going to ally with anybody, but I'm certainly going to – I certainly, when I look at the Palestinians, I understand. You know what I mean? And absolutely. I'll certainly condemn the Jews when they do brutal things like kill a bunch of Palestinians and then pretend like shoot a missile into Gaza, kill 30 people, and then bitch when the Gazans shoot missiles back and kill 4 Jews. Like, that's crying out as they – that's a good example to teach people how they are. It's they cry out as they missile strike you. So, yeah, I get, like, you don't want to – I don't want to be like the left – the far pro-Palestine left that puts Palestinians on a pedestal and everything they want is the only thing that matters. I'm not going to do that. But look, I'll say, look, here's some people. I don't even know how we would work with these people. It's just a matter of, like, hey, here's some other people that are in conflict with Zog. You know, it's good if they're in conflict with Zog.
I look at it like I don't like either of them. To be quite honest, I'm not like, you know, neither, not that I don't like them, but like,
I just don't know. I don't know enough about them to have a big problem with any of them.
I don't know enough about them. I don't know anything. Look, they've been fighting for a long time. It's none of my business. You should stay out of it. Let them, you know.
Well, no, I don't. I actually disagree. I think the Jews need to be handed a defeat.
Mm.
I think Israel needs to be defeated and frankly dismantled at some point. The state of Israel should go. I am unironically for the removal of that state.
Yeah,
100%. And the Palestinian struggle as a vehicle for that is totally something that I would support, as well as the Iranians. You know, just as the U.S. empire is way out of control, it needs to be reined in. And, you know, the struggle with Iran is a symptom of them going out of control. And they're not going to attack Iran. Okay. But also what they do to Iran, like my foreign policy critiques are, I've gone all the way back to where I was as a leftist. Fuck the U.S. empire. Fuck Zog. Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%. Like, did you see how close like they put their ships to our aircraft carriers?
Do you see how close they put their country to our military bases? What the fuck is that?
What are they thinking?
Fucking look at this aggression! It's unbelievable.
What the fuck is wrong? Like, that's so aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's threatening our interests in the region, mm-hmm. which we're not going to mm-hmm. name. Our unnamed interests in the region.
Exactly. It's horrible.
So also, like, look, I mean, why do we strangle Iran? We strangle Iran because Iran is a big country, lots of oil, and a population that's not, look, I mean, we could go and look at the populations, and I know, like, some people don't understand, like, the nuance or the difference between these populations. Iran has a higher tier population than I would say the Arab countries to its west. It actually has a lot of Persians and some Aryans. There's some white people in Iran that have been there since ancient times. Not very many, but there's some there. So they can field an impressive higher class, a higher class that can create a tech economy, an industrial economy. They have to be strangled with sanctions or else they'd become a regional power. Then they would be able to really threaten Israel. They would have a nuclear program. They'd have a fully industrialized economy and military. All of that had to be prevented, and that's been prevented by 40 years of crippling sanctions. This latest brinksmanship with Iran, it could go out of control, but my opinion is what this is. It's a lot of complicated stuff having to do with the Iran deal. The reason the Jews, because you might think like, oh, well, what's the problem if the Iranians have agreed to some controls on their production nuclear material in order to get access to oil markets outside of Iran, which was the crux of the Iran deal. Mm-hmm. And so Obama sat down, he agreed to that because he was getting pressure from China, China and India and the European Union, because these people all want to import Iranian oil, particularly Europe. Oil, gas is so fucking expensive in Europe. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's like five ridiculous. Bucks a gallon. It's like €5
it's like
a gallon.
$5 a liter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like €5 or whatever. I don't know, whatever system they use over there.
Yeah, it's the, but, it's the liter system. Yeah.
So, you know, when Trump cancels the Iran deal, what he's also telling these other countries, like, your agreements with Iran, we're canceling that. So there was this thing, Iran's going to limit production of uranium. It's going to sell a certain amount of uranium, and then it can also sell oil. But they openly said, Pompeo and Bolton said, we want to reduce their exports to zero. Now, if you want to reduce the exports of a country's chief commodity to zero, how is that not just an act of war? And for what reason? What, like, that doesn't help the U.S. Trade with Iran would help the U.S. We'd get cheaper gas, and we'd probably have, you know, it would stimulate our economy to have, like, equitable trade with this country. So what's the point of this? Well, the only point is that we cannot allow this country to develop into a regional power to threaten Israel. That's it. That's the only point. They don't give a fuck about a nuclear program. That is the excuse for all this shit. Iran is not going to get a nuke and then nuke somebody. It's not going
to
happen.
Their nuclear program has been proven to be nothing but nuclear power.
Like, yeah, and it's again a reason, because if they develop nuclear power, they can export all of their gas and get rich as fuck.
Right. Exactly, and that's what they don't want.
Yeah.
It's absolutely to do with the fucking petrodollar. That's it.
And the other thing you got to understand now, in terms of U.S. invading Iran, now, I wouldn't rule out that the U.S. might lob some missiles into Iran, but Iran has, since one of the other reasons that they're so mad at Russia is Russia started shipping in these air defense missiles, they call it the S-300s. Which are Russian air defense missiles, which has actually proved very effective, and particularly if we're lobbing in, you know, like U.S. Tomahawk missiles, which don't even hit the speed of sound, like S-300s can take those out very easily. They can also take out aircraft. So Syria has an unknown number of these. When Syria became a hotspot, Russia just started moving these missile batteries in. You've probably seen them there. They're on the back of trucks, mm-hmm. and they got radars and big and whatever. They can take out aircraft, and they can take out incoming missiles. Iran has a bunch of those, too, and they were blocked by the sanctions, but then the Iran deal lifted those sanctions. And so they shipped a bunch of them in. And that's another reason why Jews went nuts over the Iran deal. And they're like, we can't have this. We cannot have them having a capable air defense because that's what we do. We go in there and we bomb. And like, we could take out their air defense. We could take out their defense grid. We could bomb the shit out of that country. Mm-hmm. And we would lose aircraft. We would lose personnel. We might lose ships if they decide to. They also have more ballistic missiles than any country in the region. Conventional ballistic missiles. They could take out a bunch of ships in the Gulf. They could fuck us up.
They're very, very and well set.
We can't invade that country. It's too big. There's too many people. Like, if you can't, like, Iraq had 23 million people when we invaded and occupied, and half of those people hated Saddam. Iran has 80 million people, and most of them are patriotic. It's not going to happen. Like, it's just not going to happen. The U.S. has not gone up against a country with that many people in its population for a very, very long time. Not to mention half of those Iraqis were children in 2003. Half of those 23 million people were children. Yeah. So we are effectively going up against, and the other half were women. So we're effectively going up a population of 6 million, right? Like, 6 million men. It was very easy for the U.S. to go in and do that. It's not going to be so easy. For Iran, a country of 80 million people, which, one, are smarter and tougher than Arabs, and two, are patriotic. And as soon as you attack a country, they're going to all rally to their government. It's just not going to work. They can't do it. So this is all fucking dick-waving to try. And what I think is going on is they're trying to do what they said. They want to reduce the exports to zero. And they want to get the EU and China and India to stop doing business with Iran. That's what this flexing is about. That's my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about flexing. Mm-hmm. It's fake and gay, much like the Venezuela thing.
Yeah, but that was kind of a segue from DeMarcus's question, which I don't know. I mean, my opinion is as long as we understand who we are and what we're going for, having friends of other races and nationalities that are also in conflict with Zog is not a bad thing. I don't want to put their interests first, but nobody does that. I mean, when you grow up and you're mature in politics, you understand the other guy's interests come first to him. Mm-hmm. It's only whites that are expected to put their interests last. We're just not doing that anymore. Well, once we stop doing that, then we're set. So.
Yep. Right. Yeah. All right, let's take some more calls. Got some more calls here. We got the catabolic collapse with Aurelian.
Okay. All right. All right.
Hello?
Oh, God. Hi.
Hello.
hello, sirs. Oh, my God. I made it on.
Yes. Hi, sir.
You're on. What's up?
So I think this kind of ties into some stuff you guys were talking about on the on Tedious recently with, I think, the system isn't anti-fragile. I think, in fact, it is quite fragile. The downside to this, the blackmail, if you will, we may not actually see the end of it in our lifetime. Now, I've been saying for a long time it's going to be a multi-generational slog. I think everybody needs to calm the fuck down and start putting the work in. Myself, I am having my first child this summer, and the plan is basically just, you know, get through the breastfeeding and make another white baby, because that's what I'm going to be doing. Get a good job. Keep your super spurgy opinions and, you know, dangerous ideas to yourself or, you know, and closely held friends, and start amassing resources, whatever that looks like. But we have to put ourselves in position to capitalize on any opportunity that comes up, at least us crypto normies, if that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, no, I see where you're coming from, and I actually agree. I'm like 5PT now. I think that there's a couple of strategies that now you obviously do what you're doing. I have to do what I'm doing, but think that we're not gonna have a revolution, right? We're not gonna have a in the streets revolution where we overtake Zog. It's not gonna happen. You and I might have a discussion over how fragile or not fragile the system is. It doesn't really matter because the strategy is ultimately gonna be the same. Whereas I'm saying, like, and Jazz Hands was saying this the other day, too, like, the economy now, at least on the surface, is good. So, amass resources now. Do it. Get money. Get a woman. Get a community. And that's what we're doing. And that's actually what we're doing organically. Like, of every, you know, of all, every radically political movement talks about building alternative institutions, but we've actually done it. And, you know, it's still small, but if we make ourselves anti-fragile, that's the most important thing. It doesn't matter if the system collapses or doesn't. Ultimately, we'll have a thing where, oh, you, this guy was outed. Because right now, their weapon against us is outing, right? Outing you. And then they hope that you economic. Will be...
They want us to be indigent. They want us to be helpless and starve to death in the streets, right?
But economic power is people power. So if we have more people that agree with us, we generate our own economic engine. And it doesn't matter anymore, right? So that's and that's starting to happen.
Well,
where
I think the rational endpoint to this whole theory of no payment processors, no free speech on any platform that is effectively the new public square, like they're going to force us, and they are forcing us into building parallel institutions. I mean, I know that my wife and I use the Kosh certified app when we shop. We make sure to buy things that are. Made in the USA, whether or not that's a good thing, I don't know, but it's better than, you know, exporting funds to Mexico or something. And, you know, it's just little steps that you take in your life that if you do it right, they actually improve your life anyway. That's what we all need to be doing, because I know there's a lot of us out there. There is. That is a fact. The system is organized in such a way that it makes it damn near impossible for us to quantify that, but...
Yeah.
There's a shitload of us based on your own site metrics, right? Like, I remember the old days when Tedious used to do, just a boatload of downloads, unique downloads. You know, back when I used to listen to a 3.5 hour fucking podcast over like 2 or 3 work days at my desk in liberal hell.
Those days we would get huge downloads on those long ass shows. You know, it's like, you know, I don't know, because the metric, the way they do the metrics change, but it doesn't matter. We know where our metrics are going. We had a spike at the Trump years, the Trump year of 2016. We had a spike after Charlottesville. We then hit a plateau, and it's now just inching upward. Every month over month, we're inching upward. But that's not as important as all the people are getting. And one thing I'll say, though, is are the interactions that we're having since 2016, where a lot of people were spurgy and Fed posting, a lot of people were intemperate. We've grown wiser, we've grown a little bit more seasoned, and the interactions that we have in our community now are much broader and deeper and more meaningful and important than they were. So I think we're actually, maybe in terms of outward facing, we might be a little weaker than we seemed in 2016, but internally we're stronger. There's really strong networks that have built up, and that's where I want to do. And my theory is that I go out there and I discuss politics. I'm going to talk about the politics of the day, and I'll also talk about theory and history and all kinds of stuff to get people interested in joining our community. That's my approach. I'm essentially out here with Johnny and everyone else to talk about these things, to get people of a similar mindset interested in joining our community and becoming part of our community. And that means being white, wanting to be part of a cohesive and positive community, and you know, making yourself resilient to everything that's going to come down the pike in the next few years, whatever it might be. Whether it be, if it's not economic, which I think economic is the last thing we need to worry about. I think we need to worry about much more about the culture, like where are our kids going to be able to go that they're not exposed to homosexuals and third world people all the time. It's very rare that there's a place.
I mean, it's insane that the average parent, and this is hitting home for me because, as I said, I'm about to be one, that, you know, school-age children, you have to debrief them, I assume, mostly every single day, because even looking back on my own educational experience, that's, you know, that's a decade and a half, 2 decades ago.
Can confirm.
God, that's...
Yeah. I know, my kid comes home from school every day with something. I have to deprogram him.
Yeah, and there's no region of the country in which you can escape it. There used to be, but that's gone.
Like where my kid goes to school used to be a place where you didn't see that. But my kid had a reading night where everybody comes to school and they do all these activities and whatever. They had a reading night where they compared the Sneetches from Dr. Seuss to the Diary of Anne Frank.
Oh, jeez.
Because the Sneetches had stars. There were some that had stars, there were some that did not, and some were Jews and some were goys, apparently. But like this is in a place where, like, just 10 years ago this would have been unheard of.
You know, Dr. Seuss, it's funny,
it's absurd.
Well, I won't go spurging on Dr. Seuss. Now, I'll talk about Dr. Seuss for a second once the caller goes. But yeah, no, I agree with that approach. And I think that people should, you know, I guess you could call it prepping, even though there's certain connotations associated with that word. But I think prepping shouldn't be. Yeah, prepping shouldn't be just like cabin in a woods, like Ted Kaczynski style, like, you know, but it should be like a community that is resilient. That's what I want. I want to form resilient communities of pro-white people that want to survive, want their bloodlines to survive, and our history and people and our genetics and everything to survive. And look, we see all these bad indicators. We see the demographic indicators. We see the birth rates of whites falling. We see mass immigration to the U.S. and Europe. We see African birth rates exploding to the point where Africans might be half the people on the planet by 2070 paradigm shift. I don't know what year. But like by like 2040, 2050, I've seen some projections that Africans will be literally half the people on the planet. Like, we don't know what that world would look like. That's going to be a very odd place. But we just have to be ready for it. And, you know, I'm skeptical of claims of catabolic collapse or not, but it doesn't matter. We're going to do the same thing, well, whether or not we can argue about that. I know what you mean when you say that.
I don't want to argue. I don't want to argue on that. I wanted to just make like two final things, and then I'll leave you guys to it, because rhetorically speaking, I'm sure you'd stomp my fucking head in. But two things. One, you made a point earlier about everybody doing their part on two levels. One, you're absolutely right. My job is to get resources, build community, and you know, learn skills and reproduce. Your job is to reach the masses, right? Everybody needs to buy in on that and buy in on it hard. And for fuck's sake, pick up a good hobby that actually teaches you something. If you have any inkling of mechanical inclination, learn to rebuild engines, learn to fix cars, learn carpentry, learn to weld. If you're a really smart guy, you're really bookish, maybe start amassing a durable library of books that'll be useful for the collapse, both things like engineering manuals and stuff like that, but also, you know, works of Western art and culture. Everybody has their bit, and you gotta do your bit, right? But find things that you're good at, because again, all the actions that we take should fundamentally improve your life, and that's what I want to see everybody do. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, I wanted to personally give you some mad ups, Mike, because I met you at the Northwest Forum mm-hmm. a couple years ago,
okay.
And I can tell you've been putting work in the gym, and mm-hmm. please keep it up, because that's important. You gotta get jacked. About half of my converts are people in the gym that I start by bullying them about their terrible form and continue bullying them about red pills, and it all seems to flow much simpler and easier when you're like, you know, if you can bench 500 pounds, then I'll listen to you about your crazy political ideas, guy.
Well, that's a little bit much. 500 pounds. That's a little bit much.
Like, two guys that bench 500 pounds.
I couldn't even come close to deadlift. I would rip my spine out my back trying to deadlift. Oh God, my ass and my spine would just separate immediately. But no, I was actually a good friend of yours from that up in that area. Salty was here a few months ago, and we were lifting together. We were doing like masculine stuff together and things like that. He was trying to red pill me on catabolic collapse, and I was like, all right, you know, we can disagree on this. It's fine.
Oh boy.
So, but, yeah, he's a favor, he's really, and tell Salty hello for me. I actually lifted with him at that forum. He probably remembers me because I am kind of uncommonly big, we'll call it. But
okay.
Just do me a favor and tell him Aurelian Fash says hi.
All right, I will when I talk to him. I think he might be not in range of internet right now, but who knows. But
thanks, Aurelian.
Yeah, thanks, man.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Yeah. No, I got to just agree with that. I don't always want to turn shows into these kind of talks, but I do think we occasionally need to do it, and people should understand this is kind of our goal. This is my goal. This is what I'm doing. I want to build our community into a resilient, self-sustaining, and self-sufficient entity. No, we are not looking to get involved in any kind of extracurricular activities, if you understand what I mean. That is literally not what this is about. This is about ourselves. I don't care about, you know, Zog is gonna do Zog. I attack Zog rhetorically to the extent that it's, you know, it is out there as our enemy trying to destroy our people, like, and so we got to attack it. And that's also how we get people interested. But my job is to get people interested that want to be part of these communities we're building. That's how I look at it. As far as Dr. Seuss, you know, there's this attack on everybody is this and that is racist, right? Like, we had these, the third rail guys were doing the game, like, search X plus racist, and you see who's racist. All these historical figures are racist.
Sure.
Dr. Seuss is clearly going to be one of these people, because he was extremely racist, but he was racist towards Japanese people, because he's a Zog fucking shill. He's a liberal. He was pro-FDR. He's pro-World War II. He's pro-Israel, pro-Zionist. He's not Jewish, but he's a total Zog shill. He was a Zog shill, which is why he will never get the full treatment. He was racist against Japanese in a way that I don't like, because I like Japanese people. I don't like these cartoons of these bucktooth little yellow people. I don't like that. I'm less racist than that. Here's your Zog guy. You want to talk about the ill effects of racism? Well, your Zog shill guy is doing these racist cartoons of Japanese people that I don't like. I don't like this shit. I don't like those cartoons. But, you know, he's the one that's put on a pedestal. You let your kids read all of his shit, but I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
Because I like Japanese people. I mean, you know, within reason, but
Sure.
Anyway.
Yes. All right. Let's see. Who we got next? We got somebody wants to talk about the doxing of Antifash Gordon.
All right. I mean.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hey. Hey, Mike. I wanted to talk about the Mr. Exto that we discovered just a little bit a while ago.
Okay. What about him?
So I kind of wanted to go back to the discussion we had, you had, with the Tetsudo legal organization.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So anybody who was, I think it's this way, right? Anybody who he specifically singles out, hey, let's get this guy fired. Hey, let's get this guy taken out of his job. Hey, let's do this. Let's do that. Anything that he says in that respect would make him liable for a tortious interference lawsuit, yes?
In theory, yeah. I mean, there's an argument. I mean, the law is a prickly thing. I can't guarantee results, but there's an argument to be made there, depending on how extreme it was. Like, you could say offhand, like, oh, this guy should be fired, and that's, like, if you say it on Twitter, right? Like, if some right-winger or left-winger or whatever, somebody who you don't like, their identity is revealed. Like, oh, somebody should call their boss and he should be fired, but you just don't do anything. But in that case of this guy, which, you know, this guy seems to be a leader of the Antifa militia, you know, the terrorist militia called Antifa, which is not a set of tactics, it's a set of people. He seems to be one of their ringleaders. It's, in fact, an organized crime syndicate. I would classify it as that, maybe more than a terrorist group, although it does engage in political terrorism. I would say that considering that he's not just saying it, he's organizing it. He's giving you personal information. He's giving you phone numbers. He's directing and organizing concerted efforts to damage people financially, to damage people in their relationships, to end contracts that these people have. So yeah, I would say there's absolutely an argument to be made that this guy is personally liable to several people. It depends on state laws too. You'd have to research it depending on what state you're in. There are some states, only New York and California that I know of, protect your right to have a job and have a hobby on the, like, where you can't be fired for hobbies outside of work. Only New York. Now, that doesn't mean you won't be fired. It just means that you will have an extremely good case when you do get fired for getting a settlement out of your company, because they will have broken the law by firing you. You will still get fired, but you can get a lawyer and you can make a case and you can come to a settlement with the company, or you can sue them and make a spectacle of it. It's up to you. But only New York and California have those labor laws. But every state that I know of that I've researched does have the ability to sue someone civilly for tortious interference and collect the damages from losing your job from that person. This is not just a cockamamie legal theory. Multiple lawyers agree with this. You know, the guy that was on our show where we talked about this, went into it how this is a very standard legal theory. Third parties interfering in contracts is with a malicious intent is absolutely something. The word is not illegal. The word is actionable. I know this is legal spurgery. We call this segment, when I talk about the law, we're calling this Better Call Saul Invictus. That's the name of this segment. Right. Better Call Saul Invictus. So he would agree with this assessment. Like, I'm not a lawyer, but I've got some experience with this stuff and how this all works. And so, yes, it's not exactly illegal, but it's actionable. And you can get money or a judgment out of this guy if he's doing this to you. And like I said, these people don't want any pushback. The reason that these are all upper middle class nerds. They're all like liberal weenies from rich families that do this because they need some kind of thrill in their life. And as soon as it gets a little bit too hairy for them, they will disappear and back out. I mean, so I think it's effective to. Now, I would never encourage anybody to threaten these people. I don't want anybody to go and do violence to any of these people. No. But these people, it is entirely reasonable to find out the identities of people that are targeting you for harassment. And for torts and committing torts against you. It's in fact, you should do that. You should find out who they are and you should serve them with lawsuits because they deserve it. They have, and they're afraid of it because you see them tweeting a lot about it. They don't like the fact that we have developed a strategy and they expect that the court system will be friendly to them because of their politics. Like, it's funny. It's like, you know how you have this thing with anti-white people? Where, you know, you talk about white genocide, and it's like first they deny, then they justify. Yes. Antifa has the same relationship with the system. When we call them system shills, first they deny it, then they justify it. They know that they're system shills. They know that the courts are on their side. They know that the Jewish media
exactly
is on their side.
Yeah, I had this exact same experience with people in his crew. For instance, he was adding me on my Twitter, which I don't know if it would be a good idea to shill in this context on this topic.
Mm.
But he was saying, well, the docs is unverified, only a few. And then I said, well, if the docs is unverified, then why are people in his Twitter at saying, dude, I'm praying for you. I'm sorry they're coming after you so hard, et cetera, et cetera. And then he said, well, only a few of the data points can be corroborated. I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I thought none of them could be corroborated. What's going on here, pal? And then he tells me, look, he says, I can report you for anything that I want, and you'll get banned off of here, and nothing will happen to us.
Right.
Look, and then he just screenshots and he reports all my shit, and I'm like, well, I'm not violating any rules.
I would argue, I would recommend not interacting with this person, just so you know. Like,
oh, of course not, of course not.
On social media.
I posted a tweet.
I mean, unless you want to go kamikaze with your account.
No. I don't want to go kamikaze. I just posted a tweet that said anybody who was doxxed by this individual, and I added him on Twitter, that he's now actionable to a lawsuit since he's been identified.
Yeah.
And there is 11 instances in which Mr. Exo had purposefully singled out an individual and said, call this person's job. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
it wasn't putting the edifice on the viewer. It was do this.
Yeah, and if he then provided information, if he was a ringleader, if he had provided information, he was essentially organizing a harassment campaign. That's actionable.
Exactly.
So yeah, like, and he's the ringleader, and he should have to answer for this, and he should have to pay damages to people he damaged. I mean, he is going out there purposefully. To maliciously, purposefully, and you cannot. And the other thing is, he has no argument that he is not doing this purposefully and maliciously. Like, that's a requirement. That's one element of a tortious interference case. There's five of them. I can't remember what they all are. One of them is that it has to be intentional, right? Like, one, you have to be damaged. Losing your job is being damaged. And it has to be intentional. You have to be able to prove. And there's absolutely no question that these people say, we want to get these people fired all day long on social media. They're saying it. And there you go. You cannot deny that this is intentional. This is not just free speech. They can do their free speech all they want at us. We do not care about their free speech. Be a fucking stupid communist anarchist all you want. What you cannot do is harass people and try to damage them financially by breaking their contract with their employer. That's a tort. and you're not going to get away with it much longer.
Absolutely. And that's that's something that some of us have run into, and you know, legal action is being taken for it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's a little bit slow because we didn't have the one, we didn't see it coming. We were unprepared. We didn't have the legal infrastructure up and running. We didn't have the arguments ready. We didn't right. have the community support, but we've got all of that now. It took us a couple years. We had to organize. This is why
limitations helping us as well. Yeah,
this is why organizing the way we were talking about in the previous caller is so important, because we now have the ability to do this. They made it so that we couldn't just be anonymous shit posters. So now we're something else.
Yep.
I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. Way to go. Way to go, guys.
Exactly.
Here we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just, and on top of that, if he wants to claim that, well, I didn't provide the information, it was this other, like, part of this this larger Antifa network, like that article you were talking about before the show actually started and I was sitting in the queue. If he's talking about one of those large accounts, well, let's find out who those people are.
Exactly. And so if he knows...
Who this is.
And if he knows, you can ask him. You can subpoena him and ask him. So, like, all this stuff is on the table. Yeah. Yeah. So, and he's not a journalist. A journalist could, like, theoretically say, well, I had to protect sources and blah, blah, blah. But whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is that he's clearly a important node in this doxing network, this doxing and harassment network, with the intent. And the other thing is, it's like, look. What I think, it's like, if the system was serious about, you know, wanting to, they don't want to prevent, they don't want to prevent, like, conflict. Like, they're not trying to put a damper on conflict. Like, what they want to do, and potentially outbursts, they don't want to put a damper on that either. They want more of that because they want to drive people from the public square to the point where they can't participate in the economy, they can't express their opinion online. And everywhere they go, they're being harassed by these, these left-wing freaking red guards, right? If you put someone in that position, what do you expect them to do? What's their next step? I'm not going to say it here, but, I mean, we all understand what I'm saying. So that's a very bad thing for them to do. Why not just allow free speech? Isn't that easier? Why not just protect people's jobs and protect people's access to free speech and protect people's access to the economy and just allow the marketplace of ideas to run its course instead of going through all this repression, which is going to result in some bad outcomes?
I don't know. Why?
Well, I know. We all know why, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very short answer.
They lose.
Yeah. Well, in short on that topic, I just want to – I'll just show my Twitter anyway, I guess.
Yeah.
Anybody who was one of the 11 victims who he purposefully singled out for this action, you can just follow me on Twitter, Nebraska Av, A-V-E, 4016 on Twitter. And I can maybe hook you up with the archives of the tweet that he singles out 11 people.
Yeah, make sure you have
– a lot more.
Make sure you got archives and also download those archives, download the zip files so you have them on your hard drive, because archive.is comes in and out, and there's like a lot of legal action against that site because of copyright violations and else it might actually go down. So it doesn't function very well anymore, and it gets hacked. It gets attacked with it gets attacked with botnets and stuff. And a lot of people, including big business, want it shut down for copyright violation. So it's a precarious thing. So when you have things on archive, don't just keep the link. Download the zip file so you have it and you can prove it.
Absolutely, do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Cliff. Thank you.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, definitely do that. If you haven't done that yet, do that now.
Quick.
Rest in peace, YTMND, Moon Man's mom.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Yep. So do we have Ghetto Tarzan in the queue? Is he there?
I don't know. Ghetto Tarzan in the queue. He never calls in.
He wanted to call. He literally said like 2 hours ago he was going to call in tonight.
I don't see him. We got some heavy hitters.
All right, bring him in.
Where do you want to go?
I don't know. You tell me. Who do we got?
You want to go down under first? Or
we got Ranbot?
We got Evening News.
Oh, let's bring in Evening News. Let's bring him in.
All right, we got Evening News. G'day.
Hey, boys. How we doing?
Hey, cunt.
What up?
Yeah, how we doing? Look, the drought's going fine over here. You know, there's no fucking grass anywhere. All the cows are dead. It's terrific. How are we in America?
Just had a burger for lunch.
Oof, now I'm starving. We did is extremely
hectic.
It is extremely moist and green where I am. It's not only has it been raining every other day for the last 2 months. It's been raining every other day for the last, 100 years here, but it's green and lush where I am. It's just the grass, the trees, the pond, everything, man. It's a little bit humid every day, actually.
You know what I think is happening?
Oh, man.
How everything in Australia wants to kill you. Now, actually, the climate's going to get you.
See, the thing is that we settled on a continent that was similar climate and geography and plant life, etc., to Europe. So it's very green and lush and pleasant the way we are accustomed to, where we have cold in the winter, hot in the summer, and trees and mountains surrounding us, where you have a flat desert island that is the exact opposite of everything that's nice. Yeah, it's not my fault. I didn't choose that for you.
I'm personally offended by this relatable content.
I wouldn't have chosen it for you.
No.
But we can't give it up now that we've claimed it for the white race.
Right. You know what's
anyway, boys, like, I'd like to talk to you about an issue that's going on today, right now, actually. So you know how over in the States there's been all those drag queen library book reading events?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yes.
It's made its way.
I've just seen the first one. Oops, sorry.
Yeah, it's made its... I saw that video.
Yeah, so this thing's actually going on this minute. It's going to be going on for another half an hour. But yeah, so it's for the listeners, there's this drag queen called Antidepressant.
Oh, my God, of course.
Right?
Because
like,
of course
Antidepressant
it is.
Regularly performs. At local clubs in Melbourne, and also does children's events.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Wonderful.
And this dude is either really fat in a corset or fucking swole as, but...
he's fat.
Way, dude, it's fucking weird. It's real bad.
It really is weird.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry this has come. I mean, when you express surprise, though, you're like, I can't believe it made it down here so fast. Yeah. I was like, why? What is impeding the flow of this?
You want to know when I knew the whole world was going to get paused?
When?
Do you remember the Burger King commercial where they went to the Indonesian tribe that didn't even have a word for burger, and they brought them Whoppers?
No, but Jesus.
Yeah.
All right, here, I got this right here. Let's take a listen to this.
And Rag Queen, with a dream to bring a bit of sparkle to kids' worlds.
They absolutely loved it. They were singing somebody they'd never seen before.
Antidepressant reads books at story time in local libraries.
When I set out to do it in Werribee, it was never planned to be a one-off thing.
But her second story time, scheduled for this Friday at Whittlesea Library, has been targeted by bullies.
I could not understand how people could think that about another person.
Those angered by the library's decision quickly went online to express their anger, saying, "You've got to be joking. Who would subject their children to this mental illness?" And
he's
it's official. The world has gone mad.
There was a lot of comments that what I was doing was child abuse.
Whittlesea Library announced Annie's arrival on Facebook last Friday. The post attracted abuse by parents and has since been taken down. But Annie insists the reading will still go ahead. Clinical psychologist Simon Kinsella says the exposure won't hurt kids.
But there's no reason to think that these kinds of scenarios would create such massive confusion that it would upset their development. I'm not going to your house and saying these comments to you, so why come to mine?
Georgia Collins.
You're not in a house! You're not in a house. You're in a school.
You're in a school. Yeah, in a system of education.
Oh, but the clinical psychologist said it was okay.
Yeah!
Dude, like I mean, I know a bunch of people that went to like university for psychology, and they're all fucking nutcases anyway. So,
well, I mean,
I'm not going to put too much weight on this guy's words.
Well, the psychology profession is there to justify the viewpoint of the elites, the status quo. I mean, they will, if the elite have decided that it is good for children to be exposed to faggots in dresses, then this is a healthy thing. I mean, and they legitimately think this, and it becomes a status symbol to think this. Like, the American Identity guys, I still almost say Identity Europa. The American Identity guys that protested it, their sign said, adult entertainment for kids, because that's what it is.
It is.
No kid is asking for this shit.
No.
This is purely for the cat lady moms.
You cannot Line go moms. Into a first grade class anywhere in the United States and ask any kid, would you like to see a guy dressed like a woman reading you stories?
No, they're like, no, can I have like whatever the latest console is, please, instead?
Exactly.
Exactly. Can I have like
on your phone?
Oh, and the comments under the video are fucking gold. Because there's ones that are like, you know, single mums saying like, oh, my son just said to me, oh, mummy, she looks like a beautiful unicorn. Why is everyone so mad at her? Like all this shit that never actually happened.
Yeah, well, yeah. Press X to doubt. You know,
it's always single moms.
Yeah, you just pop that in, and it's like, what does your husband think about this one?
Yeah.
It's always single moms.
This phenomena would not be happening if there was not an epidemic of single motherhood, which, you know, we talk a lot of shit on black people and oftentimes deservedly so, but whites have hit the levels of single motherhood that blacks had 50 years ago. I mean, this is what the Jews are doing this to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's pathetic.
We're at levels of single motherhood that the blacks are in like the 50s, I think.
And you will never see a single mother's entire existence is built upon justifying her position,
mm-hmm.
like justifying all the decisions she made, because otherwise she'd realize what a piece of garbage she is.
Yeah.
And so they do all this. So they are attracted to other mentally ill people. I mean, this is a big hug session for mentally ill people, but they don't just hug each other. They hug each other and they go out and they try to murder healthy people to the point where healthiness is ugliness and like beauty is ugliness. Being healthy is unhealthy. Like, this is the authoritarian personality, the paradox of it. Like, being a strong dad who provides for your family and doesn't let your children around homosexual trannies is a mental illness, and being like a soy faggot, you know, with red hair, bald head, and a beard that's under 5'6" and fat, and allows your kids to go see these things, is healthy.
Yep.
That's every progressive dad. If you look on Twitter at these progressive dad accounts, every single one of them is like a manlet that's chubby, bald, glasses, and red hair. You ever see this? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
It's literally the temple.
AOC's boyfriend.
Like,
yes.
Beardson, except short.
Yeah.
Look, I'm just going to say one more thing, and then I'm going to hop out so everyone else can get a go. Look, man, in talking about this to normal people, it's just phenomenal the amount of gaslighting that you get sort of subjected to, where, you know, you bring this up and everyone's immediately like, man, what's wrong with that? No, it's fine. Why are you getting crazy about that one, man?
Yeah.
Like, what's the issue? I don't see
anything. Why does it bother you so much?
They're afraid. It depends. There's people that are... Yeah. Well, I think a lot of this stuff is people that there's a lot of just, I mean, we got to, you know, the normies or whatever you want to call them. There's a lot of people that just honestly don't care. It's like, this doesn't interrupt my consumption of product. So what do I care? Right. That's a pretty standard default attitude for people. But when you get people that are excessively justifying it, then you know that there's an issue. So.
Oh, yeah.
On Twitter the other day.
Yeah, it's like maliciously disingenuous.
Yes, yes. So, like, on Twitter the other day, David Santacarla, our pal David Santacarla, he tweets about this cookie advertisement with this mentally deranged Blatino talking about Chips Ahoy cookies on Mother Day.
Yeah.
And so he gets these two accounts that come at him like, LOL, why do you care so much about cookies? What are you? And it's like, what about this inane bullshit? I'm so tired. I was like, okay, so you just happen to zero in on this particular inane bullshit of all the inane bullshit on Twitter, which is like the motherload of inane bullshit. You zeroed in on this one tweet is the inane bullshit, you know, in your everlasting crusade against inane bullshit, you decided that this is the tweet, this right here, this tweet attacking the drag queen, that's the one for me. I'm going after that one. Yeah, so I don't know. And so you know that guy, he doesn't think it's inane bullshit. He's actually mad. That's how you know.
Yes. He was pissed.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, boys, honk, honk, and catch you later. Thanks for having me.
Of course. See you later.
See you.
All right, who we got?
He's a good guy. Saxon?
Hey, he's a right cunt. You say it like he's a. There's like two ways you can say cunt. One which is complimentary, and one which isn't. I can't remember how it goes though. I think saying he's a right cunt means he's a good guy. If I get that wrong, I apologize. I meant it in the.
He's
good
a right cunt. Yeah. All right. Saxon Newfie, the Iron Curtain over America.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm from Newfoundland. That's the name. My ancestors are from England.
There you go.
Yeah. And the book I sent you, it was written by a guy who had worked during World War II and before that as an American intelligence officer.
Okay.
And he was a bit of a McCarthyite. But unlike McCarthy, I don't think McCarthy ever explicitly named the Jew.
No, he did not. In fact, his right-hand man was a Jew.
This guy, really?
Roy Cohn.
This guy, this whole book, he has no qualms about naming the Jew. So he writes the book, I think, in the mid-50s, although I could have that date messed up, during the Truman administration. But it's really interesting because he has some insights that I haven't heard from other people. Since he was actually serving in the intelligence service, and I believe he was in Europe for most of the Second World War. He later came back to America and from some sources I've read became a professor. But he the interesting thing is that he's actually sympathetic to a certain extent to Germany during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about that. He talks a lot about all the people around, what's his name, FDR.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, God.
Some of them we now know, like, have since historians have found that they're actually communists, although that wasn't known at the time. But I think you'd find some of the stuff in there really interesting. And the section on censorship is really good as well. I never heard this from anyone else, but apparently in the middle of the of World War II, the American government under FDR ordered that all the book plates in the country that hadn't been used for something like a few years were to be melted down to make bullets.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
And according to the guy in the book, that would not have produced really any bullets at all. That you would. It's apparently, he says, I think, something like it would have produced enough bullets to last a few minutes in a firefight, melting them all down.
That also sounds like some bullshit. Like, when I hear things like that, like, I remember hearing things like these kind of myths coming out of World War II, and myths about World War II range from, like, the lurid to the absurd, and like, this is another one of those things that's just absurd if you think about it for a minute. And it's like, and you think about the construction of that myth and what it is intent. It's like, oh, look, they hated books. They didn't want anyone reading books, because if you read books,
you'd be... It was FDR that melted them down, not the Nazis.
Oh, right. All right. Sorry. Then I guess I'm all wrong. But did that not happen then?
No, the book burnings, they just weren't the books we think they were.
More books are banned in Germany today than they were in the Third Reich. But
Absolutely. Well, the Nazi burnings were mostly, a lot of that was actually like Jewish pornography. But
it was.
No, FDR ordered them all melted down. And according to the guy who wrote the book, most of the books that hadn't been printed in 5 years at that point were classics. Since they would just print them every few years, put out a whole bunch. And what that enabled them to do, what that basically resulted in, was that after the war, less people were reading the classics, and more people were reading some of these newer novels that had come out. You mentioned earlier in the podcast, To Kill a Mockingbird. That's a perfect example of the kind of books that this ended up propagating.
Yeah, well, I actually didn't know that was... So then this was actually... I was actually 100% wrong. And this was done by the Allies on purpose to destroy the propagation of Western classics.
Basically, and when you look at the number of Jews in the Roosevelt, and Roosevelt obviously wasn't Jewish, but when you look at the number of people around him, and he goes into this in the book, it's absolutely, it's crazy. It's like Trump now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm aware of this. I mean, there's a lot of books you can get that hint around this fact. Witness is another good one. He doesn't name the Jew explicitly either, but you get what he's talking about. Like, once you get woke to the JQ...
The guy who wrote it, John Beatty, he does name the Jew quite explicitly.
That's good. Yeah, no, I'm seeing that. So you sent a copy... Wait, you sent a copy of this to the P.O. Box?
Yes, you showed it on the show at once.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll have to. We get a lot of books. I'll have to. It must be still at Jesse's house. It's in my bookshelf here.
One of the interesting things I found was he's very Christian, the guy who wrote the book. Although I don't think it, even if you're not Christian, I don't think it detracts much from the book. But you would believe if you listened to like the media, and of course, by the time I was reading this book, like about a year or so ago, I had already not believed the sort of mainstream thing for several years, but he doesn't come across as a lunatic at all, right? I mean, he actually condemns, one of the big problems he has with World War II, despite the fact that he was fighting in it, was how many people were killed, right? Like, they tell you all the time that, like, the Allies were, you know, they loved, like, life and mercy and basically all that's good.
That's
and
a lie.
They're just, like, killing people.
Yeah, that's a lie.
Now, this guy was on the Allied side, but he writes about how, like, horrific some of the things that were done to Germany were. And he was, like I said, he was an American intelligence officer, so he was very well aware of all the things that were going on.
Well, here's the thing I want to say. Okay, so after the war, the German soldiers were put into concentration camps. Millions of them.
Yeah,
the Rhine camps.
And they were actually subjected to physical torture, and they were worked to death. They were killed. They were subjected to physical tortures, and
they had.
Do you think? Well, just let me finish.
No sort of shelter whatsoever. They were just out in the open the entire camp.
And let me
some of the confessions the German soldiers gave under the Russians. I mean, they must have been tortured. That
there's no question that they were
the brain bashing machine.
Yeah.
But here, listen to this point. Listen to this point, though. We have a delay, so we're talking over each other. Sorry. But listen to this point. So a lot of those German soldiers, almost all of them, to the extent that they survived those camps, they died young anyway because of the abuses and the physical punishment that they were subjected to in those camps. Almost none of them are alive today. Very few. Why is it that you hear about 100, 102-year-old 99-year-old Holocaust survivors all the fucking time? They come out of the woodwork. They're increasingly producing more. The population is expected to increase next year. You hear about these old Jews all the time that supposedly were in these camps and suffered all these indignities and these brutalities. Yet we have a case of actually documented men that were military men that were put in camps and subjected to brutalities, and if they didn't die in the camps, they died young later, and almost all of them are dead. You don't hear about old Nazis, but you do hear about old Jews all the time, right?
So
if you're put in a camp, let me finish. If you're put in a camp and you're subjected to torture and physical harm and whatever, which is what the Jews allege happened to them, you're going to die young. So where the fuck are all these 100-year-old Holocaust survivors coming from? It's bullshit. It's all bullshit. And yeah, the pedal-powered brain bashing machine, if you believe that, then I don't know what to tell you.
No, I agree with
you.
But I was the brain mesh machine, that was a confession that was signed under the Russians. I mean, the guy who signed that was either it was totally just made up, like made it up, or they tortured him to get him to confess to that.
The Nuremberg trial confessions are 100% coerced. I mean, by
no question.
The worst torture artists.
There's no question.
The people that invented torture back during the Crusades and the Inquisition. So,
yeah.
They're really good.
So what was the name of the Auschwitz guy? It wasn't Rudolf Hess. It was another Hess, though. The guy that...
Host. Yeah, it was...
Host. Yeah, he confessed, and then he went back on the confession. Yeah. And then they killed him. So it's bullshit.
But, I mean, look at, like, all the most lurid stories. Not all of them, but many of them from the Russians. And you know that those confessions
No, it's all coming out. It's all coming out of...
Poland.
Poland.
Every single thing was come out of... Every camp was liberated by the Russians.
Any German who confessed to something, like you get people confessing to the most absurd of things.
Yeah, you know, they showed.
Like if I confess to, I don't know, killing JFK.
Yeah, yeah. Oh God.
And you get people confessing to this, and you know that either they just wrote up the confession and faked the signature, or it was torture.
Yeah, and it's important for people to get this that it all was. I mean, it was Soviet occupied Poland, and it's also important to understand. The Polish communist regime that was installed in 1947. Now, in 1946, Poland was a little bit of a free for all, and there was actually pogroms where Polish civilians were killing Jews.
Yep.
They were pogroming Jews, and then the Soviets moved in and they implanted a Soviet style communist regime that was overwhelmingly Jewish. In fact, it was one of the most brutal Jewish communist regimes that there was.
Jewish.
And like, and this is where this is the regime under which the Auschwitz was constructed, under which Treblinka was constructed, and all of the myths and the propaganda about those two places was produced by this regime. This is really important for everyone to understand.
That's absolutely utterly crazy.
About this. We talked about Stryker did an episode of one of his shows. We talked about this. There was a woman named Anna something who was, she was Jewish, and she was, she ordered this, I mean, some of the stories Stryker says, it's like,
oh, dude, this is really bad. I forget this woman's name. I know what you're going to go. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, you probably know what I'm talking about. Stryker, I don't know a whole lot about it. I just heard the podcast, but you should, I mean, if anyone's listening and is interested, they should go back and find that podcast. But I was going to say, he does talk a bit about the Holocaust in the book, too, and the way he talks about it, he says, what is it, that in, like, the last few years, he started hearing this number 6 million being bandied about, and he says that he looked in his what was it, he got, like, a copy of one of these Jewish encyclopedias or whatever that are put out by, like, the World Jewish Congress. I forget exactly what it was, but he looked in it at the number of, they keep statistics on the number of Jews, and he looked in it at the number of Jews during World War II, and the number does not go down by 6 million.
Well, here, let me find some stuff on this. I've got
some material. It's not even close. It's like, actually, it's like very close to the original number.
Well, look.
Well, I could believe that some died, because, I mean, 20 million Russians died during that war. So surely some people died, but the idea
some died, but it wasn't anywhere near, like, millions at all.
Well, here, I've got some material.
In fact,
but you guys filibuster for a second while I find it.
Okay, I was going to say, the book is very good, but one of the things that he's really critical of in World War II in the book, and he's critical of sort of the American side, for their, and especially the Russians, since this guy was a bit of an anti-communist, a bit of a McCarthyite, is how inhumanely the war was prosecuted. Mm-hmm. He talks about the fact that it was almost like the main purpose of the war was to kill rather than to win.
Right.
No, that's in some ways more of a red pill. Because, look, we can go into minutiae about Holocaust revisionism and things like that. And I think there's something worthwhile to it. But I think sometimes
about that, most sort of the sort of Jewish communist infiltration of the states.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, look, this is probably a pretty good book. I haven't read it yet. I'll grab it from Sven's house tomorrow and I'll take a look. But it sounds like you might have read this book, and maybe some of your first red pills on this, because you're telling me stuff I've known for years. Like, you're surprised. You're like, oh my god, this is, you know this, which is fine. It's cool. It's cool. It's just funny.
I've been listening to your podcast for about a year or two, and you mentioned, I think, on Strike and Mike, the article that Ron Unz did about the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm. That's a great article.
American Problem.
And I've never really been convinced. Revisionist narrative. When I first became a white nationalist, I was actually kind of pro-Jewish, since I came in from the sort of Breitbart crowd.
Okay.
And then I started listening to your show, and I started to become sort of, what's the famous quote? Slowly I began to hate them.
Yes.
But I was never truly convinced of your narrative on the Holocaust until I read Ron Unz's article. Mm-hmm. And he mentions this book in the article, and I went and found it on Amazon. I don't know if you'd still be able to find it on Amazon now.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Some books you theoretically could find, like, it's hard for them to censor, because a lot of these books are being sold by independent dealers that list their stock on Amazon. And then Amazon, I guess, has to go and remove them. So they know to remove Kevin McDonald. They know to remove Greg Johnson. They know to remove a few other figures like that. But books like this, that it's not obviously a thing. Like, you could still, the thing is, what they did with David Irving.
I don't know about your copy, but my copy is a Star of David. Superimposed over the hammer and sickle on the front.
Well, yeah, but that, I mean, are they picking up on that? I mean, I don't know. Like, it could be. I see it on Amazon right now. It's actually still available. I searched it.
And they haven't taken it down then.
No, I haven't. Now the Star of David's not on the cover anymore. But maybe there's a new edition or something. But no, they haven't taken it. So you can still get some of these books. What they did was they took people that they could link to white nationalism now, and they removed their books. So they removed Duke's books. They removed Greg Johnson's books.
Yeah.
They removed Jared Taylor's books, et cetera, et cetera. So they did that. But some of these older books that are related to our interests, you can still get.
Well, I know Mein Kampf was sort of the first one they took down. It was, like, I think it might have been, even before 2010, the biggest bookstore here in Canada, which is owned by Jews, Chapters, said they would no longer sell Mein Kampf.
You can get Mein Kampf, but you get, I think you can only get you can get the Mannheim translation, which is a hostile translation.
It is.
You mentioned one of them was like translated as like my lust. They translated one of the chapter names as like my lust for murder.
Yeah. Well, no. They've got. I was sent a copy of a 1939 translation of Mein Kampf, unauthorized English translation done in 1939 in the United States by the New School for Social Research. Now, if you go to Hitler.org, this is the same translation they use. It's not a terrible translation of the text, but if you go to the chapter headings, they insert sections that are not part of the original text where they characterize that section themselves. And so the chapter titles are still accurate to, I've got like three translations to the other translations, but I haven't read this, the whole version of this. The only one I read all the way through was, I think Murphy. But in this one, it's interesting. So literally in like, I don't have the book right here. It's all across the room, but, they have these subheadings that are not part of the text, and they say things like lust for war, desire for vengeance. Like, and it's just like, shut the fuck up. It was done by the New School.
I was going to say the other interesting thing about the book is it was the guy who wrote it was like a conservative, not like a conservative, but like someone who actually believes in like the old style American right.
He was somebody that was praised by Buckley.
No, he wasn't. Yeah, I would say he's more like more of a McCarthy kind of guy.
Purged by Buckley, not a
Bircher.
Purged.
Not sure.
No,
I don't know.
Who knows? It doesn't matter. He was just right. Yeah.
All right.
Actually, on the back of the cup, some very high profile people on the American right at the time, like one of the former members of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, actually praised the book when it came out. But like the New York Times and all the other publications refused to mention it.
Dude, there was a time when there was a brief window when you could have things like this. Like when there were some people like Joe Sobrin and others that – this is a famous example of people that would be – could be critical of this stuff. And that is long gone.
It was also written in the 50s. I think was before sort of everything was consolidated around National Review.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Yes.
But the interesting thing is he's like you get so much sort of hostility to like Arabs and Islam now on the right, which I was big into that before I got into like the alt-right and started, I guess you could say, becoming more critical of a certain people. And the interesting thing about the book is you don't get any of that. He actually talks very positively about like the Palestinians. One of the downsides of the book, probably the biggest one, is he's a believer in Khazar theory.
That was common, though. That was only disproven recently with genetics. Douglas Reed, whose books you should also read, believed in that. I mean, it doesn't bother me if authors are wrong about a few things. You know what I mean? Like, no one's right about everything,
he
right?
He did get wrong, but he makes a good case for it, even if it's not correct.
But it doesn't matter. I just think it doesn't matter.
But I was going to say, really his stance is that Palestinians are the real Jews, which I'm not sure how much truth there is to that.
That sounds really stupid.
Hold on, who were the real Jews?
Palestinians. But he's generally pretty sympathetic.
I thought you said Indians.
Stryker would probably like this, but I actually think that the hostility that has been put towards Islam on the right is done by Jews, and I think that
there's
part
no question
of the reason they support the immigration is to make white people and Muslims hate each other.
Yes.
This
is so clear. They want Europe is also the ones being flooded with Muslims, not the United States.
Sure.
The United States.
Well, parts of the United States.
Somebody showed me
now too.
Yes, I know, but Europe, it's another. It's out of control compared to what we have. But I don't doubt that Muslims are extremely unpleasant to live near, that is very jarring. It's a very different culture. We should not be mixed with them. But I don't have a hatred for Islam as a concept. Oh. Like, there are some people that they want to attack the religion of Islam. And almost always when you start doing that, you start coming at it from a liberal perspective. So you're reinforcing liberalism. And conservatives are the worst about this.
Well, I used to be big into the like, counter-jihad stuff myself, but before I got into like more white nationalist stuff. So I do think it can act as sort of a gateway, but I definitely agree. Islam is not like the problem. I don't think there's anything like necessarily wrong with the Islamic religion. The problem is that the people who generally follow it are these sort of foreign people.
Right.
and they just port them en masse into our country. Like, I'd rather have, like, a Bosnian Muslim as my neighbor than, like, an African Christian from, like, the jungle.
Right, and the thing I would say is this. I mean, look, that statement might generate controversy. I don't really care about it. But my point is this, that they would very much like the conversation to be about. See, the problem with it is that if all these groups that hate Islam so much and they're so against Islam, there's a very simple and elegant solution to this problem. We just don't have them in our country.
Don't import them.
Don't bring them in. How hard is that? But then what happens is when you critique Islam from a liberal perspective, what happens? One, the racial element is left out of it, because a lot of this is racial. It's like these other races. I mean, Islam could be argued
entirely
to be,
racial.
Yeah, it's like these other races. Well, they also have this.
They'll pull out that one redheaded white Muslim.
Well,
chick.
Okay, that guy's a moron. But the point is that, like, fine, one moron. It doesn't mean shit. Like. The point is that you ignore the racial aspect of it. So you're not the reason people in Britain, for example, and Europe are upset is the racial difference of these people that are coming in. They're rapists, they're whatever. And, you know, Stryker often rubs people the wrong way because he says things like, well, if anything, Islam makes these people better. And it's like, all right, like, that's actually deliberately, but let me just continue. That's deliberately intended to provoke people, and it does provoke people because people aren't thinking about what he's saying. So I'm going to just white knight for a second. What he means is that, you know, if you have people that are like these low IQ brown people from, you know, wherever, Pakistan or wherever, they're just going to go around raping. So Islam sets a certain of rules in where women have to be accompanied by men and they have to wear bags over their heads. That cuts down on the rape. Now, I don't want to live in that society. But the easiest solution is just keep Pakistanis in Pakistan, right?
Yep.
That's it. So we don't have to go into... And so what they want you to do is critique Islam from a liberal perspective, ignore the racial angle, and engage in the same fantasy they engage in with blacks and with other non-white races, that they can become white people with the right inputs from our liberal institutions in the West. Bring these people in, expose them to liberalism, liberalize the religion, make it just another, like, deracinated bullshit thing, the way Christianity, the bulk of Christianity has become in the West, and then everything will be fine. That's not the case.
Which is the worst. Like, I'd rather that they be in their own country and, like, be fundamentalists.
And if they're going to be here, I would rather they were under Sharia law. Like, everyone says, like, these enclaves in Britain.
In, like, segregated areas, absolutely.
Yeah, these enclaves in Britain where these Muslims live. And they're like, oh, well, they're enacting Sharia law. I'm like, good. Make these men walk out with women and make the women wear bags on their head and keep these people in that area if they're going to be here. I don't want them here at all, but if they're going to be here, put them under Sharia law. That way they won't rape everybody.
Oh, I was going to say, but the other thing is, like, think about the three groups of people that, like, are the ancient enemies of the Jews. It's like white Europeans, Arabs, and Persians.
And Russians.
Those are like the three big enemies historically, and they've managed to get all those people to fight with each other.
Yeah, and also look at this. Who is it that you can make a Hollywood movie? Who are the perennial bad guys in Hollywood movies? Is three: Germans, Russians, Arabs.
Yeah,
am I right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
or
God,
a combination of like some
or a
some
combination thereof.
Yeah,
yeah.
With the one smart black computer programmer guy.
Oh yes, the one smart black Blake. So. Here's a good quote.
These people shouldn't be like, Islam is bad, it should be Islam is fine or whatever, but you're essentially foreign and don't belong in our country.
Well, look, I mean, Islam is Islam. I'm not going to convince like 5 million brown people or 3 billion brown people or whatever to be like something else. And I don't care to. The issue is they're a foreign race, and of course a foreign race has a foreign religion. So if you start getting mad at the religion, then you're going down a path, and for the religion on the basis of, like, the precepts of the religion, like, oh, Islam has, and I'm sure that there's stupid things in Islam, right? I'm sure that there's really dumb things in the religion. I just don't care. And if you come at me with that, I'm like, what do you want to bring these people in and make them, what do you want to do here? Like, do I care if in Pakistan they wear burqas? I don't give a shit.
Counter-jihad, like, or maybe some, I know some people in the counter-jihad thing are, like, more white nationalists, but... Like, especially for, like, the Jews involved in that, like, they basically just want to make them globo homo and bring them here.
Yes, that's exactly right. And, well, they want to do two things. They want to make them either globo homo, bring them here, or make them even worse kinds of Muslims, like these Wahhabists, Salafists, or whatever. I don't know. People have spurred about what we call them. But we know
idiot.
ISIS. We like the ISIS people, whatever you want to call, like, people have spurred out of me. Oh, they're not Wahhab. I don't care. They are useful morons for Israel. And they are essentially a proxy army for Israel.
ISIS is...
And that's another big red pill that you can show that to people in the counter-jihad movement that aren't Jewish, the white people. And look, I do agree. The one place I disagree with Stryker is I think that positive people can come out of those movements. Because if you get involved in that movement, that shows a certain healthy respect for your own race and culture. That you're like, look, these foreigners are here. Even if you're being put down red herrings and wrong paths, you're still got the right instincts. I agree. You know what I mean?
That's where I came in. Like, I first came into, like, the alt-right when, like, Milo and Sargon were doing their bits about it. And I was like, these ideas that they have actually sound, like, better than what I'm currently following.
Sargon.
Yeah. So, anyway.
All right. We're already going over.
Yeah.
Rich. All right, I'll leave now. Just one last thing. I think people shouldn't be so black-pilled. I think we're in a better position than we were in 2016. Like, I talk to people now, and they know they're under attack. Even, like, here in Newfoundland, where it's very white, like, you talk to your average normie, and talk to my grandpa, my grandma. I talk to anyone, like, people even here know that they're under, like, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of people recognize that they're under attack, and when, like, some people seem to see, like, the media going increasingly insane. Like, you guys were reading that article on Fash the Nation where this rabbi was saying, like, Christian churches have to teach that the Gospels are wrong and that Christianity is, like, immoral and is responsible for, like, the Holocaust. And they're doing that because they're increasingly desperate. They're increasingly losing people.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, look, the problem is
it's than they ever have been before.
As Jazz Hand said,
absolutely winning.
It's the blessing and the curse of what they've done. Like, you cannot. And I was listening to FDN today, by the way. Everyone should listen to the episode that came out this morning. They can't pretend that Jews aren't pulling these levers anymore. When you see this shit with Trump, and he's surrounded by a gaggle of Jews, and you see this shit with Iran. And it doesn't benefit a single person positively except for this small group of people to all this brinksmanship and stupid shit they're pulling. There's only one person that it benefits. It actually makes no sense unless you understand the Jewish question. You cannot make sense of the U.S.'s stance towards Iran unless you understand the Jewish question. You simply cannot. And
it's not
so,
even so much people, like, very few people, I think, do get, like, the Jewish thing. But people know that, like, they're under attack.
Yeah.
In a way they didn't a few years ago.
Yeah, but even with the Jewish thing, what I'm saying is that, like, they can't hide anymore. They're out there. It's so exposed. It's actually normal. The fact that they have to shut down people for talking about it's part of the discourse. And frankly, I'm going to take a little bit of credit for doing that. We did that. The coincidence detector was a big... Yeah, we had a big part of this, like Barbara Lerner Spector. We're going to be a big part of this.
We have a much bigger cultural influence, or not, maybe not me, since I'm not a podcaster, but you guys have a much bigger cultural influence than just your audience. I mean...
Yes, absolutely.
People in your audience go and they talk to people, and other people learn about ideas. The one thing I found is that if, like, you try to talk about the ethnostate or, like, a white-only society or, like, a mostly white society, people think you're a bit nutty. But if you say, like, we're under attack, like, look at this stuff in the media... We the only way we can defend ourselves, because they're attacking us for racial reasons, right? Because they hate us for that reason. We don't necessarily have to hate others, but we have to say, like, listen, it's not okay for you to come after us because we're white. And people respond very well to that kind of talk.
People will respond extremely well. And the thing is, you got to break through some of that early Spurgery, ethnostates and such. Don't start look, I mean, we actually got to go. I can finish this out. But my final point here is that kind of stuff is impossible for people to imagine. And so we have to start where people can imagine. And when they can imagine, you're under attack and you need to defend yourself. And it's not okay for people to attack white people once you get them there. Because if you associate that with, like, a far-flung vision, like, I do think ultimately we are...
Don't anymore, because they know they're under attack.
I think that's getting easier and easier to do. I've noticed that more and more people are open to to admitting that white people are under attack nowadays.
Oh, they know that they're. And it's impossible to deny.
But now it's getting okay to kind of talk about it amongst each other,
The media is trying to make it more and more, like, unacceptable, but every time they try, it has the opposite
effect.
Makes it, like,
worse. It makes it worse for them. It just keeps pointing it out, and more white people are like, hey,
Like you possibly read that, even if you hate white people, if you're anti-white, you can't possibly read that article that you read on FDN and not think that white people are under attack.
Right. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, we're already like, wait, we only took like
we're a few minutes over. It's not a big deal, but we're going to,
bye.
All right. See you later, man. Do we have anyone else you wanted to take, Johnny?
We have so many callers. I don't know. We got Rock's got two bits.
All right, bring Rock in. Just bring Rock in. He just emailed me. He's all butthurt. If he's still on the line, bring him in.
I don't know. Rock!
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
What's happening?
Sir, how are you?
Made it. You guys are running late tonight.
We'll just go an extra 20 minutes here. We'll go a little later, you know, whatever.
I'll do the bullet points. Well, let me see if I still remember this. Regarding Palestinian issue, my least favorite form of anti-Semitism. It's extremely unsatisfying to me. Aggressive dads. Irish connection, ? You know, there's, you know, probably room and a need to investigate this. Anti-U.S. empire would be on board, but I'm a little bit afraid of the Chinese filling that vacuum.
They're already positioned for it.
The population of Africa exploding. I mean, I could always use, like, more roommates, I guess.
sure.
That's actually like a true story. With like fucking like a rotating number of them for like what, 7 months or something like that. It is kind of like you expect it to be. It's a very fast moving, fast paced environment. Like there's like always like some kind of little scheme going on. People are rotating in and out of some form of like incarceration or you know, probation or whatever. It's never ending, really. But I'm glad
Blagues.
Say what?
You're getting Blague roommates?
Yeah.
No, I had it's a bit that went on the tedious. I actually had like back when I was like a whippersnapper, I had 6 black roommates. It was a turbulent time in my life, let me tell you. Yeah, dude, like every day, man, like there's like some kind of scam going on, like the buying DVDs at one store and returning them to like a different one of the same like outfit, where like these stores where you can buy like at one store and return stuff to a different location, and they would like heat seal the DVD packages and shit like that, like every single day. And just like they try to get me in on a couple of these things, and I'm just like, no, like.
That's how they make their money.
Not my gig, man.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's how they make their money.
Yeah, it's a really odd environment where like there's no like grocery budget because their mom always comes by and just like drops off food, and like the hat gets passed around every once in a while. So like, ma needs to go buy chicken, literally shit like this. So like, everyone was like, what do you have in your pocket? Like, we need to go buy chicken for ma, and you soon just like show up with like food and stuff like that. It was like the weirdest thing. What else? What else did we do? Did we need to strike off? Flat Earth. I was, watching the kids, found this documentary where they follow around the flat earthers, and I realized that's us. They're like this self-segregating group of like people who are increasingly, insular, and they have like infights too, where they call each other shills. Feds, CIA agents.
Yeah.
It touches on all the points. It's super analogous.
That's a great documentary, by the way. It's hilarious.
I don't remember what it's called. Do you remember?
Except does anyone give a shit about them, though? Really? That's the thing. Like, nobody actually gives a fuck, though.
But they just had the guy from that documentary, I can't remember his name, they just had him on, like, CNN doing a debate against some, like, actual scientists, and he held his own.
I mean, if you say so, but
no, it was pretty decent of a showing. I was impressed at how.
Why are they putting this retarded shit in front of people's faces? Like, this is just this. Like, here, be involved in this retarded thing instead of something that matters.
Mike, it's Commonwealth, bro.
Dude, right. What I don't get. Why are you questioning Commonwealth? It's like the least interesting like conspiracy theory out
there. Yeah. Okay. Like, where are you going to go with that?
Essentially, there's a lot of overlap between like these different communities, right? So you got your anti-vaxxers, you got your people who are into banking, conspiracies and such.
Well, I'm into so, banking like, conspiracies.
What they do if you conflate all of it.
Yeah, my thing is with the flat Earth thing is what's the upshot of it? Like, what's the goal here? Like, what do they do? Why are they hiding from us the fact that the Earth is flat? Why are they lying that it's a globe? What's the purpose of this? Never got a good answer to that.
Exactly.
But even better than that is, who cares? What does it matter?
Well, I mean, the truth matters, right?
Does it? Oh, it does. Okay.
I think it's... Well, see, the problem is white.
You're being oppressed by this heliocentric model.
Right.
Well, I really don't understand what the goal of why would the establishment like conspire to hide.
I don't know that it's the establishment or whatever, but like, I mean, it's in the Torah that the Earth is flat.
Yeah, well, it's in Plato that the Earth is round.
Yeah, right.
In multiple places. Like, yeah. I mean, who are you going to believe? I know who I believe.
Believe Jews?
There was one dude who said that NASA sounded a lot like the Hebrew word for deceive.
That's some good. That's some esoteric. Like, that's some hitting.
There's a whole lot of
That's hitting levels of pattern recognition that shouldn't even be possible.
What's his name?
Because they have
Jordan Maxwell. We're reaching levels of Jordan Maxwell shouldn't even.
Dude,
be possible.
I love Jordan Maxwell so
He's
much.
So awesome.
It's amazing.
Actually Jewish, by the way, Jordan Maxwell.
Really?
Wait, what?
Where did you get that? I've never heard that before in my life.
No.
I'm seriously, where did
guarantee
you get
it, man?
No.
He does not
no
he looks nothing like a Jew.
Do you understand? He had all his money taken from him. Like, he got duped by somebody who was helping him like write his
biography. I think he's a Hapa.
That's possible. Right. But the guy doesn't look Jewish. He doesn't have a Jewish name.
No,
I'm not entirely sure that is his real name, though.
I think Rock is trying to get hung up on.
is this a sensitive chord for you, Johnny?
Don't fuck with Jordan Maxwell, all right? We know he's crazy.
Okay? No, dude, he said it himself, man. I pretty much guarantee him. I wouldn't be wrong about this.
I've listened to literally every word he's ever been recorded on it. I have most of it on my hard drive.
He has said, now he does talk to this guy, Zachariah Sitchin, who is Jewish.
Yes.
Well, he's friends with him too. Okay. But he has said, and I've seen speeches where Jordan Maxwell has said, I'm Jewish, I'm Christian, I'm Hindu, I'm Muslim, yeah. I'm every religion at once because I'm a believer in God, and he's claiming he's got some sort of pan-humanity spiritualism thing. So I've seen him say that, and if you clipped it, you could get him saying, I'm Jewish, which would actually be a great drop. But, you know, he's never specifically said, he's not ethnically or racially Jewish.
No, absolutely not.
He doesn't look.
I might have to dig this one up, but like you might have to crow on this one, John.
If you find something, send it.
I'm pretty confident.
Mike's gonna also have to eat crow because he's not Jewish. No.
But why am I gonna have to eat crow? I've been saying
you're saying he's not Jewish too, but he said.
Oh yeah.
He's like pantheistic. He said he's everything.
Yeah,
I've heard him say that.
I've heard him say this. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, when I get off the line, I'm gonna find the reference.
I found an image here.
I'll produce it.
I found an image here that says Jordan Maxwell, Judaism, the Moon, and Saturn. Now that is some woke shit. That is some highly woke stuff.
Judaism is a Saturnalian cult.
Yes,
right?
Like, definitely. 100%. That is like, if you don't know that,
if you
just don't.
That Saturn is real, of course.
I mean, if you don't, Saturn is real. It's out there in the solar system, right?
Saturn is the Death Star. Is what it is.
Well, we don't have to get into that. Look.
But it's also said that like the act of circumcision is like a Saturnalian ritual.
Yeah, that's
right?
Look.
It
if you don't actually, if you don't understand Judaism as a cult of Saturn, then like don't even call me. All right.
Don't even follow me on Instagram, okay?
Yeah, like, dude, just get off my Instagram. I'm not interested in talking to you plebs. That if you can't even...
All right, Rock.
All right.
Are those YouTube bits?
Yeah. All right. So I want to leave you with one more thing.
All right.
You, Mike, you did this bit on Jews controlling the way we perceive our media. I wanted to inject like one more take on that. Mm-hmm. Is that Jews have actually altered goyish beauty standards? And I'm not talking about just like getting a bunch of melanated individuals on the screen. They've actually cast throughout the years so many Jews as goys that has actually like changed sort of like the beauty standards of just like white people in general through their casting practices.
How do you account for all the Jews that get all the plastic surgery to look more goyish? I think that unless you're saying that people find like Adam Sandler attractive, is what you're saying is that they've like lowered the standards to make Jews more attractive. But I think most Jews in Hollywood get plastic surgery to look more goyish.
Well, okay. This is a topic on which I could get really autistic, and it gets into issues of phenotypes and different types of Jewish body types and stuff, and I know what you're saying. Like, for example, okay, think about this. Scarlett Johansson, right? She's Jewish, right? But she's also not a typical, what you think of as a typical Jewess. Like, you would look at her and you wouldn't necessarily see someone Jewish, but she is Jewish. But look at her body type. She's extremely voluptuous. She's very curvy. She's got big hips and big milkers, and it's extremely desirable when you look at it. But there's a idea of an Aryan woman as being more slender than that has disappeared, where like this overemphasis on voluptuousness and one could attribute, it's almost like porn, the way porn actresses look. Scarlett Johansson looks like a porn actress, right? And like porn actresses are always overemphasizing the fertility aspects of it. So there's no idea of like slenderness being beautiful anymore. If you get what I'm saying, like, not that I'm talking about people on fat bitches, but you know what I'm saying? And like thick, like this emphasis on women being thick now is a Jewish thing as well. And, you know, so it's gone from just being extremely big tits and big hips to like now actually moving into the area of thickness. And this is part of their attempt to normalize people that are just like fat ultimately.
And let's not forget that Scarlett Johansson had a nose job.
Of course. Obviously, they're not going to be able to change. They're not going to be able to make them. They're not going to be able to change the perception of facial beauty. That's something that Aryans have a lock
on. That's what I'm talking about.
I think it's happened a lot with males. With like sort of like the Adam Levine types and like
I think you're right there, yeah.
Well, I think I think
with women, like the sort of like the emphasis on thickness is just like a general like look at this thick squat, like go get a girl, that type of thing. In the case, I think it mainly is in the case of men, because like when you talk about Scarlett Johansson, I think she's like a very common example, but not the best one, because she's like part Danish, and like the sort of like the big hips, big tits. It's also like sort of like a farmer stereotype, farm girl.
Yeah, like farm girl.
You have like girls like that all across like parts of Denmark, Germany, Holland, et cetera, right? Whereas like the taller, slender types are more like the Norwegians, the Swedes, parts of Germany, that type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I know. I see what you mean. I think because also more male actors are Jewish than females. Hollywood farms like goyish women and then uses them up and spits them out. But you have more of the, Jews are more, in terms of acting, they're more represented in men. And yes, they have changed the, I see what you're saying, a Bradley Cooper type or something like that is what we're looking at.
Is Bradley Cooper Jewish?
It doesn't matter. He looks like one. He plays one quite often. He swore the Mediterranean.
I don't think Bradley Cooper is a Jew.
But he looks like a Jew. This is my point. Like, look at him in, I haven't seen a movie he's been in. I haven't seen a movie in years. There was a movie I saw where he was playing a Jew, and he looked the part to a T, and he acted like one too. And he's kind of put out there. Anyway, I see what you mean, but this is high levels of autism.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's not Jewish.
But he looks like one. That's what matters. Yeah. He looks like one, so he's a Gentile that conformed.
He went to Georgetown.
Well, think about this. But think about this. He's a Gentile that conformed to look more like a Jew for prestige and status.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's no such thing as Jewish power. So, you know. Except you got goys changing themselves.
I think my favorite example.
What?
I think my favorite example is Harrison Ford. Because, like, that's kind of like sort of like a half stepping stone where you have these, like, half Jewish actors that are being promoted very heavily. And he even has come out and said, like, as a man, I identify as Irish. As an actor, I identify as Jewish.
Right, because that's how you get jobs.
Been, you know? Professionally.
Exactly.
Dude, Bradley Cooper looks so Jewish. Holy shit.
Yeah. Even with the blue eyes. Like, there's so many Jews that have blue eyes now.
Oh, yeah, dude. Well, because they always marry, you know, they do this. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is getting into spurgery levels that a lot of people are going to find unrelatable content, so.
That's all right. Sorry to everybody that didn't make it on the show tonight.
Yeah.
Thank you, boy.
All right, Rock. Let me give a shout out to the guys that didn't make it on the thing that we're going to say goodbye.
All right.
You want me to do that? Is that cool?
Yeah.
All right. We had Trad Life, Peter, Dr. Mayhem, FEMA, and Don Vingio. We'll get to you guys next week. I'm sorry, fellas.
Yeah, sorry about that. We had to spurg on revisionism for a little while. I was going to give a whole bunch of numbers out of almanacs and shit, but it's like whatever.
Holy shit.
Whatever. I mean, it's just funny to see. The funny thing about all the numbers is that it's just funny to see them. It's funny to see them all, how, like, none of them match up. They're all just all over the place. So it's just like anyone claiming to know, it's just like, for you just obviously have no idea. And as far as that Jewish communist woman that Saxon Newfie was talking about, her name is Anna Pauker. She was she was born Hannah Robinson. She's a Romanian communist in the Romanian communist regime post-World War II. She performed all kinds of weird psychological experiments on people where they would keep people naked in rooms and they would see what they would do after a while, and they would start eating their own feces and stuff, and they would just, like, weird shit like that.
So torture.
So she was just, like, torturing the goyim and experimenting on them, and eventually the people started hating her so much that she fled to Israel and became an ardent Zionist. And even if you go, it's Anna Pauker, A-N-A-P-A-U-K-E-R. Her crimes are covered up, and the Wikipedia page on her claims that because she was a victim of anti-Semitism in the Soviet Union and Romania, she had no choice but to flee to Israel. And then, of course, in Israel, she became an ardent Zionist. So, you know, this is how these people work. This is actually an incredibly red-pilling story. Like, she was legitimately... And one of the main things that she was doing while in Romania was facilitating exporting Jews to Israel. She was facilitating the migration of Jews from Eastern Europe to Israel. It's actually, on some level, you could see that as possibly a good thing. But she was doing it. She clearly didn't give a shit about her own country. Or her own country. You know what I mean. But yeah, she was subjecting the Romanians to torture and experiments and things like that for the sake of, you know, science or some bullshit. I don't know. But they claim that she was just a victim of anti-Semitism, had to flee to Israel and, you know, yeah. So, yes.
I hear you. It's people.
Anna Pauker's legacy in Romania is tainted by the attempt of Communist Party propaganda in the 1950s and 60s to scapegoat her as the leader responsible for the crimes of the early communist period. She is often referred to as Stalin with a skirt. So, of course, she gets this level of sympathy, right? She gets this level of revisionism of her record. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, I'm so sick of this. It's like, if you can't see what's going on, I don't know what to tell you.
I know it's more and more blatant and right in your face and sitting in your lap and slapping you while it's sitting in your lap. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't understand what more people need to see. It's like directly in your face.
Oh my God. As historian Robert Levy put it, so, you know, and of course Wikipedia is going to present, oh, it's just an unbiased opinion of a historian. It's not a Jew it's not a Jew talking about another Jew. It's not a Jew covering for the crimes of another Jew. It's an unbiased historical opinion. Historian Robert Levy put it, long the party's propagandist scapegoat is a source of all the horrors of the Stalinist period. Anna Palker continues to be vilified in post-communist Romania as the party leader most culpable for the post-war years repression. But the truth is that this perpetually contradictory figure, though a Stalinist and one who played a key role in imposing communism on Romania, paradoxically presented an alternative to the rigid, harsh Stalinism that soon emblemized Romanian party life and left a hidden legacy as a persistent patron of Romania's peasantry within the communist hierarchy. It's like, shut up, Jew. Shut the fuck up. You're a liar.
It's like, even though she brought in Stalinism, I mean, I get that she's the one that brought the communism there and imposed all, like, the bread lines. I know. We get that. Yeah, it's great. But she had these ideas.
Yeah. And the fact that, even people are saying the fact that she was criticized at all is because she was scapegoated. It's the same shit. She was scapegoated. She didn't do it. Other people did it. They blamed her. It's not fair and blah. Shut the fuck up. Anyway, this story of this woman is a major red pill, but we don't have time to go into all of it. Everybody, research her yourself. Absolutely. And we will see you guys 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Two weeks. 2 weeks. And I'll see you tomorrow on Tedious. Where's that outro music?
Aeronormies.
Yes. And check out everything else on the site. I'll see you guys soon. All right. Bye.